Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It was not as volatile as the Trump-Biden debate, but there were a few fireworks and some points made. We're dissecting the vice presidential debate between Senator Kamala Harris and Vice President Mike Pence. We're going to start tonight with a Republican perspective, but we are also in the WHUR studio, so if you have a thought about this, give us a call. 202-432-WHUR. 202-432-WHUR. I have Paris Denard with me, Republican National Convention Senior Communications Advisor for Black Media Affairs. And certainly you're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Paris, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Did you have your popcorn and jujubes out last night?
I did not, but I definitely enjoyed watching the debate. I thought Vice President Pence prosecuted the prosecutor and did an excellent job winning that debate handily.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you think so, because there's a lot to talk about. So, what do you think Vice President Pence's best parts were?
I think the best part was actually being able to hold Senator Harris accountable for the things that she has not done in the criminal justice space. His direct quote that talked about the fact that she had walked out of a meeting with Senator Tim Scott and other Democrats. Cory Booker was actually one of them in the room, I know for a fact. And then later filibustered his bill on the Senate floor that would have provided the accountability that many have been calling for and more resources. And we're talking about the Justice Act. I thought it was an important point that he made and talking about her own record as a prosecutor when she was the DA and the Attorney General in California, and the statistics that he told the American people about as it relates to the Black community being 19 more times to be prosecuted for minor drug offenses than whites or Hispanics. I think that we have to examine the records, and it's important for the American people to have a total picture as to who these people are and what they have done or what they have not done to help our community. Certainly he did that.
Well, let's talk about what they have or have not done, because the very first question was about COVID-19. And one of the things that, you know, the vice president has constantly talked about was the president's record. But the thing that has been so problematic, and you have to admit this, let's tell the truth and shame the devil here, is that she said that the president, like she said, now see, there you go, interrupting me. I didn't interrupt you. It's just like last night. Come on, Paris. So here we go. The president knew, as it relates to that interview with Bob Woodward, he knew on March 28th, he downplayed it. Yeah, he was talking about trying to keep the American people calm and not panicked. But the reality is the president knew. And the White House right now is a hot spot. You know, how can Republicans, and specifically the Trump administration, explain this away? The president tested positive for COVID-19 just last week. There were all of these questions about when he tested negative last. Come on, Paris. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's be honest here. You know, this is a kerfuffle.
Well, I wish you would have so much disdain for China, because that's what this virus came from.
No, I want to talk about what's happening in the White House right now. China was back
the
then.
Culprit,
let's talk about where we. Let's talk about where we are right now. Because
where
if,
we are, where we are right
if the
now,
president,
is the, where we are right now, reclaiming my time. Where we are right now is because China gave us this virus, and we would be in worse shape if President Trump had not close off travel from China in January, which was called xenophobic by Joe Biden, and it would have led to even more deaths. And like the president has said, while we have 200,000 plus dead, one is too many, and it would have been double, tripled if quadruple that had he not acted when he did back in January.
Okay, well, let me reclaim my show. And here's the thing here. I was asking about President Trump and the hot spot in the White House. We can talk about China all we want, but I'm talking about what happened last week. We are now joined by Drew Elands. She's a progressive political analyst. Drew, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
I'm feeling good. How about you?
Good. I'm glad you joined me because, you know, I'm trying to moderate this conversation. I love Paris to death. I love the brother. He went to Morehouse. That's all right. But still,
no, I didn't. I went to Pepperdine, but
not,
okay.
Okay, well, I guess that's all right too.
You're confusing me with another black conservative, but I guess we all look alike. That's okay.
Or sound alike. But anyway, Drew, help me with this because, like I said, the reality is that the White House is a hot spot, and I will say that. Senator Harris did not bring that up last night. She should have. What do you think?
I think the right thing, first let me just say, I don't know what was said earlier, but a moment to appreciate the historic moment of a black woman who graduated from an HBCU as a vice president nominee. That deserves a moment of recognition. Second, I think, you know, the going high part of not mentioning it is because clearly people who have been impacted and are infected from the lax rules and regulations that's going on within the White House, some are really, really suffering. Others are really, really sick. And to point it out would have been, I guess, maybe a political chit. But, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to let people just wallow in the mess that they've already created. We all know that they haven't been following rules within the White House as far as what their CDC has told us to do. So, yeah, there is an infestation going on at that White House. And starting from the top, leadership means a lot. And you can see how leadership has failed even within its own house. So that's why you have what you have. And could she have mentioned it? Yes. Should she have mentioned it? Yeah, I probably wanted her to, but I don't know if it was the best thing to do.
All right, 202-432-WHUR, 202-432-WHUR. We're in the WHUR studios for the first half of our conversation about the debate. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Okay, the next thing I want to really talk about and wanted to... The president says that he doesn't want to do a virtual debate. The Presidential Debate Commission is concerned about his COVID-19 diagnosis. The president says that he is immune. He says that he is not contagious. You know, come on, Paris, talk to me about this. You know how deadly COVID is. We are still so uncertain about the issues of immunity, about the issues of spread. And if the commander-in-chief can get it, then shouldn't we operate out of an abundance of caution?
So regarding the debate, the yeah. Debate Commission should not have acted unilaterally in siding with the Biden team to just change the debate. What we know is that on October 15th, Vice President Biden could be tested for COVID. If he turns out to be negative or positive, you can adjust then. President Trump could be tested on October 15th. If he turns out to be negative or if he turns out to be positive, you adjust then. That's what happened last night with Vice President Pence and Senator Harris. They both tested on site. They both came back negative. They went forth with the debate. Now, the Trump campaign said if they are truly concerned about health reasons, if that's the real reason, then let's move it to October 22nd and then have a second debate on October 29th. That seems reasonable if they're truly concerned about the timing and COVID. But the Biden team has rejected that. So I don't buy that is really the case. I think by October 15th, they could test like they always do and see what the results are. Because what we do know is October 15th, Joe Biden could be tested and he could come out positive. And then what would happen? Because we don't know what that. And the last point I would make about COVID is while more people have gotten COVID and survived than have died. And like I said earlier, like the president has said multiple times, even having one death is too many.
Drew?
I'll start from his last statement and move up to the debate. One, just because more have survived than died does not discount. And the fact of the matter is, if we had
let her speak.
If there had truly been a travel ban, it was only a travel restriction. If there had truly been a travel ban, then we wouldn't have had to deal with it. By the time this president said we're going to put in a travel restriction, which still allow goods to travel, which means if goods can still be traded, that means people who bring the goods over can still come over. We already had two confirmed cases with the Wuhan virus in the United States. Now, just now that it is here, where the failure came is that this administration did not lead. That's the bottom line. And it's so much so that they did not lead. That is why there's an infestation in this particular White House.
All right.
Now, for the debate. What we know for sure is that this current president has coronavirus. He is not immune. You can't be immune if you already got it. You got it. So therefore, he has it. He's positive. We don't know when he first became positive. We don't even know what his last negative test is. And honestly, as many lies as reported by the Washington Post, over 20,000 lies that come out of the White House, why in the world would we trust anything that's coming out of there? So allow this president to heal. Allow him to get better and to make sure that he is truly not contagious before you bring the American people that's going to come in and ask questions in the town hall, and before you impact the person who is doing the moderation, and before you impact Vice President Joe Biden. To me, safety is first. Do a Zoom. You're talking about dissing American people, because this is a town hall. American people who have questions that they want to ask both of them. To me, do it virtually. Everybody else got to go through virtual. My child has to do virtual learning. I have to work virtually. My husband has to work virtually. We all are in this virtual world now. Do it virtually. Health and safety should be this president's first priority.
There you
go. But clearly, it is not.
Thank you so much. 202-432-WHUR, 202-432-WHUR. We are talking about the debate last night between Senator Kamala Harris and Vice President Mike Pence. So I'll start with you on this one, Drew. Your thoughts about Susan Page's moderation of this debate. Exactly. Thank you.
That's all I got.
That's all I got to say. We should have brought Chris Wallace back.
Oh my God. That whole thing of giving deference. You can't give deference to people who are not going to follow the rules. And this whole notion of trying not to show or make it seem like things are leaning one way or other. Wrong is wrong. You just should have just called it out. And unfortunately, we are at this point where there should have been a mute button on everybody's mic. And I think that's why the current guy that occupies the White House is afraid to do a Zoom, because he even said that I might get muted. I think she did the best she could with what she had. She did try to rectify the equaling of the time towards the end. But she did not. She did what she could with what she was presented. That's all I'm gonna say. I'm gonna be nice. I'm nice tonight.
All right, Paris, Susan Page.
Yeah, I thought Susan Page didn't do a great job. She didn't hold Senator Harris accountable. She didn't follow up and ask her the tough questions. There was this whole host of questions I would have asked Senator Harris. I would have asked her about how the fact that she started to say that she believed Joe Biden's accusers. Before she was his running mate, but now she's not talking about that. I would have asked, I thought she would have asked her about Joe Biden's 1994 crime bill. I thought that she would have asked about followed up on the abortion issue and the disproportionate impact that it has on the black community. I thought she would have asked about the fact that Joe Biden was one that has said a lot of things that have been bigoted, and how should she stand next to somebody that as the president, whom she called out for his bigoted comments in terms of calling it a racial jungle and being against busing and being against school integration. I thought she would have asked some of those tough questions, but she didn't. And I think on the last point about the equal time, at the end of the day, when you tallied up the time, an article came out that showed that both candidates had about the same amount of time. And I think Vice President Pence spoke for about 5 seconds more, but they both cut each other off. They both interrupted and they both didn't abide by the rules, but ultimately they both had about the equal amount of time and the American people were served for, because finally, Senator Harris was asked tough questions, not by Susan Page, but by Vice President Pence.
Okay, well, let me stop you there. Hold on, let me stop. Let me stop you there. And on this, first of all, on the piece about asking Senator Harris tough questions, they were both asked tough questions, and both of them, and I would argue Mike Pence more than Senator Harris, but the Vice President is notorious for deflecting and obfuscating. I don't think he asked one question right. And I will say this about Susan Page, and I do this on my show, when he went to Senator Harris and said, why don't you answer the question? If I were Susan Page, I would have said, Mr. Vice President, I'm running this camp. I ask the questions. I need.
Then why didn't she ask it?
I don't know. Which is, like I said, I don't think she did a good job.
And then why
either.
Didn't she answer it?
I don't think. Well,
she didn't,
because I
didn't
he wasn't,
have to
I got to take
it,
a break,
Harris.
I got.
She didn't have to answer.
I have got. I got to take a break.
The American
she doesn't answer
know.
To him.
Why is she hiding?
She did not have to answer to Pence.
Yeah, and Pence didn't answer anything either. Listen, both of you.
No, actually, he did.
Reclaiming my show. I need to take a break. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141. John Mons is up next with the original Quiet Storm. Woosah, let me tell you, we are getting it in. 2020, boy, it is going to be a year to remember. Stay with us. We will be back with the second part of this heated, muscular conversation. I'm Harold Fisher. I'll see you back here in a few seconds.
If you have a pre-existing condition, heart disease, diabetes, breast cancer, they're coming for you. If you love someone who has a pre-existing condition,
they're coming for you.
If you are under the age of 26 on your parents' coverage, they're coming for you.
Yes, indeed. That was an excerpt from last night's vice presidential debate. Mike Pence, Kamala Harris, head-to-head, but not really, because there were plastic partitions there to keep them safe. And everyone else. This is the Insight segment. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Harold Fisher. We are getting both sides of this issue. We have with us progressive commentator Drew Elans, also a Republican activist Malik Abdul, to talk about this critical debate. And if you have a comment or a question, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go to the phone lines. Let's talk to Walter, calling from D.C. Walter, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Mr. Fisher,
how are you?
When you had Paris Bernard, he's like a little instigator. You always want to pick a fight. But when you stand up to him, he runs like a little girl.
Okay? No. Let's be respectful. I like Paris. I do like Paris. We just don't agree.
Well, here's the
but
thing.
But I like the brother. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. When Mike Pence is in charge of the Corona Task Force.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be in charge of watching this whole thing. And then I remember when Herman Cain went to Tulsa, Oklahoma. He had cancer. Him, his entourage was at the rally. And as soon as it happened, he died. So they don't take responsibility for their actions. And it's sad that 210,000 people are died. 7 million has been affected with this virus. And yet when you got a president who has gotten special treatment and privilege taking drugs that is mentally, I mean, let's put it this way. Donald Trump is mentally disturbed, and right now he is just not, I don't think he should be president, but like you said, the debate, I mean, look.
Walter, I know you're flustered. I'm going to let Malik respond to what you're saying, but I appreciate your thoughts. Malik, thank you for joining the program. I asked this of Paris. Did you have your popcorn and jujubes out when you were watching the debate last night? Malik, can you hear me?
Yeah, it actually went as I expected. I literally predicted, and I was telling people days, even last week after the disaster of a performance that both gave last week, I actually said that people were going to overestimate Senator Harris and they were going to underestimate Mike Pence. And I think that's exactly what happened. I you know, for the most part, they were pretty even as far as the things that they decided to address. But I think just on style and optics, Mike Pence just won that hands down. Because I think a lot, when you're talking about a debate, and which is what it was, and people were watching that, I just think he won on that hands down.
Why do you say that? Because a lot of pundits and I said last night, and I agree that Mike Pence is not Mr. Excitement first and foremost. Mike Pence does not answer questions. Last night, Mike Pence was classic Mike Pence. Mike Pence did not answer one question directly. And I would argue that Senator Harris did not answer directly 90%. I think she got about 10% of the direct answers. Mike Pence doesn't ever ask anything. And as a matter of fact, there was an article in the Washington Post today that said that Mike Pence, and the president even said this, he marveled at the fact that Mike Pence could talk for 5 minutes straight and never directly answer a question that he was asked. That's not a debate. That's talking points, Malik. Come on.
Debates are art form. Some people are good at it. Some people aren't so good at it. And we saw that, and that's what we saw last night with Mike Pence. You can disagree with anything that he didn't answer or whatever, but the fact is that on style and optics, he actually got the debate. Him being boring, it actually worked to his advantage, especially when you consider that pair that against what we saw last week. It actually worked to his advantage. He's a very cerebral guy. I said at the time that Mike Pence was going to be able to describe every single policy of this administration. And so when he was talking about COVID and many of the other things, the foreign policy, he was actually really able to dig into that type of thing. And that's something that really benefited him. I think that when people overestimated what Kamala, because I remember at the time people were saying that she was going to mop the floor with Mike Pence. Well, she didn't mop the floor with Mike Pence at all. I don't think that she did a terrible job, but the expectations were set so high for Kamala Harris that she just underperformed.
Let's talk about that, Drew, about the expectations for Kamala Harris and all of this discussion about how she kind of pulled back, that she didn't go in as a lot of people expected because she didn't want to look at the quote unquote, look like the quote unquote angry black woman. Your thoughts about that?
So the first and foremost approach that she had to have was a first do no harm. Do no harm to the campaign for Biden and Harris that's already ahead in all the polls. Do no harm to make it seem as though she is trying to do more, way more than anything else. People have already or tried to say she's trying to take over the campaign, and that's the narrative that comes from the right. So she needed to make sure it was clear that she came in to support and defend the record of Joe Biden. She did that, and she did that flawlessly. As far as for Pence, he did not explain any policy at all. In fact, he did not talk about health care. He did not say what they were going to do with health care. He only wanted to do his job, which he did a good job with, is try to go out and attack Joe Biden. and try to attack her. So, yes, he did it softly and so demure and all of that, but he said much of nothing, and everybody saw it. And ultimately, he didn't win over anybody. He did not win over the suburban white mom, because he did not answer any of the questions, nor did he give any details, as your guest said, about any of the policies. He talked over it because there aren't any details to actually provide. He could not give any details about what he's done on the coronavirus task force, other than to retort that whatever the Bidens are saying that they're doing, it's only the same thing. But what we know is whatever it is that's going on in the White House as far as the task force is concerned, it didn't work. Instead, he pivoted to the American people. And in fact, this is what I wish Senator Harris would have said. It's like, you're absolutely right. The American people are doing their level best to protect themselves because there is a failure in the White House.
Mm. What about this piece about the about her demeanor and the fact that she could have been less subtle, more aggressive, more muscular in her?
I don't think she needed to.
You don't think so?
I don't think she needed to do that. I think she did exactly like we see many African-American women do in high places when they have to deal with somebody who thinks they know more than they do. And having to deal with somebody who excessively tried to cut her off and deal with somebody who just consistently lied. Everything he said almost was a lie that came out of his mouth. But she showed incredible restraint and smiled through it, just like many of us women have to do every single foul day.
I don't think
she should have did that.
I honestly wish. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think she had to level the hammer as we know she can do as a prosecutor. I think she was supposed to do exactly what she did. Yes, would I personally want her to, you know, beat him down with her words? Yes, get it, girl. Tell him off. Tell it. But that is not the role of the vice president. That was not her role last night. I can read it. It was written all over. What's the sign? It's written all over your face. It was written over her face every time he cut her off. Like, listen, you better stop. So we didn't need all of that. We didn't need her to be all flamboyant. I think she did her job like she was supposed to.
Let me see what Kim has to say, calling from Woodbridge. Hey, Kim, what's on your mind?
Hey. Hello.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to comment on Paris's saying that, you know, it's China, China, China. If he could come up with any other excuses or any other solutions that they did at that time besides close China, because if you do the real fact-checking, at that time, everybody wasn't banned from China. There were American citizens who were still allowed to come home. And also, while they were focusing on that, thousands of contaminated people from Russia flew into New York and turned that into a slaughter ground. So I just wonder, what else can he say they did at that time to prevent this?
Kim, thank you so much. And Paris had another, we left Paris at 7:30. We have Malik now. So Malik, can you at least respond to what Kim was asking about?
Well, I think if we look at what was happening at the time, there were a lot of things that we know, obviously, that we know now that we didn't know then. The idea of the travel ban, and to the extent it was that is something that many people were against. And I'm sure you know, just as many of your listeners out there, Donald Trump was actually called a xenophobe for doing that. Yes, there were still questions about, well, exactly what should you do? How does that affect the global supply chain? When you close that, if you close down any imports coming from China, there were a lot of considerations that were there. And maybe the administration should have known those things. But as I've said many times before, I cannot think of an instance where our federal government has had an A-plus response to some type of disaster. In this sense, it was a global pandemic of the kinds that our country really has never seen before, maybe since 1918. But when you're talking about having to shut down an economy, shut down schools, shut down businesses, shut down cities, wear masks. I mean, this is just something that was totally unprecedented. And so I'm not one of those who's going to say that every single thing that the federal government did was right, but I'm also not going to say that every single thing that the administration did was wrong. That's where I think Mike Pence, it was a big benefit to having Mike Pence there last night, because he actually talked about how they used the Defense Production Act. He actually talked about testing. He actually talked about the vaccine. And to the point of that vaccine, I think it's very irresponsible for Senator Harris, especially being a black woman, to play footsie with this idea that you don't trust vaccines, because we know in our community there's a history of distrust there is a history of distrust that our community has with the vaccine. So to play coy and cute by half and say that somehow she won't listen to Donald Trump, when she will listen to the scientists, where the scientists are the ones who are producing the vaccine.
But hold on, Malik. But Malik. But the president is not listening to the scientists.
Donald Trump has.
And this is where we have to be. This is where we have to be intellectually honest. The president is not creating a vaccine.
Yeah, but he's not listening to the scientists either.
We're talking about a vaccine. We're not talking about
Okay, Malik, hold on. Let me go ahead, Kim. Let me go ahead and jump in. Go ahead.
I just want to say the president is talking about having a vaccine by election time. That seems very unrealistic. I agree with Kamala. I would not take a vaccine by election time. That seems more politically motivated than what the scientists are saying.
Yeah. Drew, go ahead.
So I was going to say, if we want to be honest on this call, let's just call a thing a thing. That is a lie that she said she would not take the thing. She was very clear, because this particular president and this particular White House lies with ease. So she said clearly, if Dr. Fauci and the scientists say it is time and it is clear, I will take it. But I will not take anything that Donald Trump said. She said that clearly, plainly, everybody can understand it, because he has lied. If he's lying about being immune from something that he already caught, then you know he is going to lie about anything that he feels that's going to help him, just like he is going back and forth around this virus, just like he's gone back on his word about putting a nominee on the Supreme Court if it's election time, because I do believe he said that in 2016, you shouldn't do it if it's an election, right? So now he's gone back on his word on that. So if you start talking about the lies and the untruth that's there, no, the scientists right now, including the FDA, is saying we want to put extra controls on this. We want to make sure that it is all safe. And then it'll be ready. Most of us are saying it's going to be ready until the next year. So yeah. If Trump has said that there's some vaccine, I mean, this is the man who said, inject yourself with Clorox. Take some other stuff. Come on. Why would you take something that this man says do? No.
Yeah, Kim, thank you so much for your phone call. Yeah. I want to move on to something else because this is really important. Not to say that the other issues are not. I think the thing that disturbs me the most last night was that, and I just knew that Mike Pence was going to be a stand-up guy about this, and he disappointed. Malik, when they were asked about peaceful transition if they lose the election, he did not say yes. And not as a Republican, not as a Democrat, as an American, we've been doing it since George Washington was in office. And neither the president nor the vice president has said that they will leave the White House if they lose via a peaceful transition. If you want to talk about truth and transparency, does that not give you pause, Malik?
No, but that's not something that gives me pause at all. I wish that Mike Pence and Donald Trump, even though he's answered the question before, I think that they should have been forthright in just going ahead and saying it. I don't think that there's going to be an issue of not a peaceful transition of power in the event that Donald Trump does lose. Yeah, so I don't have a problem saying many times, as I always do, disagreeing with something that my party does.
No, I'm talking about, I get that.
But I'm saying, so
I'm talking about last night.
It doesn't give me pause to hear Mike Pence say that. I wish he actually would have answered the question in the affirmative, but it doesn't give me pause to say that. People in these debates are about games. And so a lot of this stuff is a lot of gamesmanship. There are many things that Kamala Harris didn't answer herself. But understand that we're talking within the context of this is something that people like Hillary Clinton has been pushing about Joe Biden not conceding the election. This is the political climate that we're in. And so I don't have a problem calling balls and strikes and saying, well, you shouldn't have done this or this side should have done that. The problem is that that's not ever going in the reverse. So
that's not true. First of all, Hillary Clinton's not in office. And when Joe Biden was asked about that, he said that he would. Next topic, because I don't want to miss out on this other point. Drew, the thing about packing the Supreme Court, neither Joe Biden nor Kamala Harris will answer that question. Why not?
I think Vice President Joe Biden said it best, is it would make a conversation about what he has said. I don't think that has been the top of anybody's mind, nor is that the top of the American people's mind. At this moment, it is about what's happening in this court. And in fact, Joe Biden and Senator Harris have also talked about there are ways to make sure that winning the presidency, winning the Senate, and maintaining the control of the House is to making sure that the law of the land deals with Roe v. Wade, that the law of the land deals with affordable care and expanding Affordable Care Act. So there are more than one ways to deal with whatever that's coming on November 10th. But let's make sure we focus on why everybody is rushing to have this woman in position to deal with what's happening on November 10th, which is the Affordable Care Act, and dealing with the pre-existing condition. I honestly don't believe that that has been a discussion that they've actually had in depth to even respond to. And I don't believe that it was not asked of Susan if she didn't have to answer it. When it was asked of Biden, I think he was absolutely correct in his answer.
I disagree. Because
and I like what she said about the packing of the court, because if we're going to talk about packing of the court, and out of all the judges that they rushed through for lifetime appointments federally, not one of them were black.
And that's a separate point, and I think that's a very valid point. But I'm talking specifically about the Supreme Court, and I do believe. Right. I do believe that people are very concerned about that. People started being concerned about that minutes after the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the status of what was going to happen on this court, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, independent. Everybody is very, very concerned about what's going to happen with the Supreme Court, whether it's about the new nominee, or whether or not it's possibly the packing, or whether or not the impact is going to impact Obamacare or Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. I think everyone is very concerned about that.
I think everyone is concerned about the current nomination of the Supreme Court in the way that it's already positioned. I do not believe everyday Americans outside of the Beltway is concerned or even talking about, well, if she's appointed, even if they believe Roe v. Wade is right, I don't believe they're saying, everyday Americans are not saying that if she is appointed and she is seated, that then we need to talk about expanding the court. What they are asking is, if this happened and Roe v. Wade and the Affordable Care Act is in jeopardy, what are you going to do to ensure that I still have the full control and faculties of my body as a woman, And what are you going to do that I am not impacted or impeded because I am a woman as a, having a pre-existing condition? So when you're talking about what everyday people, we are talking about that. We are talking about, oh, my gosh, now that it's there, now it's going to be uneven. But everyday people, that is not what they're talking about. And that's not necessarily where the campaign is really focused on. That's their work is on meat and potatoes, kitchen table things, and that is just not something that everyday people are talking about.
Well, let's talk about one of these other kitchen table things, because one of the things that I think is very, very concerning to the 22 million people who are currently under the Affordable Care Act is that, and Malik, this is for you, and then Drew, and this will be our final point, but, you know, the administration, the Trump administration, has been talking about a new health care plan since before it was the Trump administration. It has not happened. And under the Affordable Care Act, the pre-existing condition concern is that's very real, Malik. That is extremely real. And the Trump administration, they're in court trying to overturn the Affordable Care Act. And what will happen if they do that and they have no plan? That I think that is really, really difficult to defend, but I'll let you go ahead and try. Go ahead, Malik.
Well, it's not a matter really of defending anything. The Congress should have actually had a plan, a package together over the years. It hasn't happened for many reasons dealing with this that have to do with Congress not being able to get things done. Donald Trump has signaled many times before that any plan that he signs needs to have pre-existing conditions.
But then why is he in court trying to get rid of it? If that is to be believed, then why is he in court right now trying to get rid of that? Because
that's a separate issue. Whatever he's doing in court is a separate issue from anything that Congress will pass. And so what he has signaled as the head of the party is that anything that he signs will have to be taken into consideration pre-existing conditions. He's talked about it many times before. This is what he said. We cannot believe him when he says it, but this is exactly what he says. I think that they should have had a replacement by now, but unfortunately don't. And I'll just have to push back a bit. The Supreme Court is really something that American people are concerned about. And for many reasons that we've discussed already, yes, health care, voting rights, this is something that people really are concerned about. And Senator Harris raised a very good point, and I actually agree with her that Donald Trump has not appointed anyone to the Court of Appeals. He's actually made lifetime federal appointments, but he hasn't appointed anyone to the Court of Appeals. And I actually had an article posted in the Washington Examiner, published in the Washington Examiner, where I'm talking about the fact that there are no, where it's titled, No Room for Black Women on the Supreme Court. And I actually go into the fact that there are only five black women on the United States Courts of Appeal, which is the second tier under the Supreme Court and from where all of our justices, with the exception of Elena Kagan, have been selected. There are only five women. There are 179 slots, and there are only five black women.
Malik, I need to stop you. I got to let Drew get the last 30 seconds or minute in. Go ahead, Drew.
So here's the thing. They don't have a plan. When President Obama and Vice President Biden and that administration went together to do the Affordable Care Act, they called in members of Congress, they called in think tanks, they called in different activists and medical professionals, et cetera, to put together a plan and delivered it to Congress. So if the president shall lead, he should lead. He should have a plan, work together within his administration and deliver it, because we know that he already has a feckless Congress in the Republicans that are elected that care nothing about health care. So if he really wanted it, he could get it done.
That is going to be the last word. I want to thank Drew Elins, Paris Denard, and Malik Abdul for talking to us. Whew, you guys are wearing me out. Wearing me out.
We love you. Thank you. Love you too.
Love you too. You know. And Malik, give Paris a hug when you hear him, when you see him.
Absolutely. Fist bump.
Yeah, that's right. We're not hugging right now.
Right.
That's why I like Malik. See, Malik is listening to the science. There we go. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. For this Thursday, October 8th, I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.